The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. With me today are certified financial planners Spencer Hager and Cameron Utley, and we're going to get into some fun conversations about fun and adventuresome ways you can retire. You know, you hear these stories about people buying tiny homes and people retiring on cruise ships. I read an article recently about an older woman who decided she was done with life as it is in the suburbs, and she decided to start living on a cruise ship. So we're going to kind of peel apart what it would be like and what you should consider if you're kind of going that direction. Let's talk about some of the ways that people can kind of kick up their heels in retirement besides tiny homes and cruise ships, thinking, you know, houseboats, floating homes, eco-villages. You got nothing? Eco-villages, co-housing, historic homes, or castles. Can you imagine living in a castle in retirement?
Sounds fantastic.
That sounds terrible.
Living the dream, huh?
Yeah.
Remote or off-the-grid living is a big one. A lot of people, you know, there's a lot of YouTube channels where people are homesteading and going off the grid and creating this whole little life for themselves with chickens and goats and
See that all the time.
Gardens. Yeah. I mean, seriously, there's a lot of YouTube channels about
that. Hard to meet with them on Zoom, but, you know.
Or they're living on a yacht. Have you ever heard of...
I've heard of people doing it. I don't know anyone personally who's done it, but yeah, I see articles on that too.
There are a couple of people. I have a friend who likes to watch this young couple who live on a catamaran, and they are raising their children on this boat, and so it shows the daily activities of what that's like. Now, that's certainly not retirement, but certainly somebody in retirement could do the same thing. Artistic or creative retreats, there's wellness retreats, health centers, nomadic retirement options. Very different lifestyle than, say, you or I or the average person taking on, you know, after 40 years of working. So I want to go into what that might look like. Pull up my handy-dandy questions here. Campers? Forgot about that one.
Yeah.
Living on campers. Have you ever heard of anybody selling everything and buying a big camper and just going?
No, but I know plenty of people that retire and then have that in their plans, so they're just traveling the country, you know, spending 2 or 3 months out on the road in the summer, things like that. So not full-on sold the house then, spent life in retirement there, but a little bit of both, for sure.
I saw someone on the news recently that lived that lifestyle, just drove across country to an RV, and you know, one thing that they found out was that you could do free parking and hookups at every Cracker Barrel in the United States. Hey. So they went to 670 out of 671 Cracker Barrels in the United States.
That's a lot of hash brown casserole. That's a lot of hash brown casserole.
Commitment, you know?
But for, you know, safe, right? So safety is obviously something to think about. You know, mm-hmm. just the sort of utilitarian things of why you would mm-hmm. do it. Your safety is obviously the most important thing. But how do you, if you've got a potential client in front of you that says, I think I'm going to, you know, kick up my heels and, you know, hang the hat and start homesteading in Brazil. You know, lots to think about. Tax optimization, but, you know,
I'd probably ask them first if they've been to Brazil.
Okay, so let's peel back the layers. What do you talk to them first about when they have these ideas?
I think some of that is universal, like to what Cameron's getting at. So if it's you actually want to go sell your house and live in a camper, or you just want to buy a second house, you want to fly back and forth between Ohio and Florida, just whatever that is. I mean, I think that is a fair question. Like, it kind of sounded like a joke, but like, have you actually played this out? Have you actually tried to live this way? Have you tried to, you know, have you spent 4 months down in Brazil, or, you know, have you traveled back and forth several times per year going back and forth between Ohio and Florida? Like, is that actually desirable? Did you get tired of only ever being in those two spots. So I think that's the first part. And or if with the camper, like, have you tried to live 6 months in there and was it miserable? If so, probably don't do that, because you could just be shooting yourself in the foot because you commit to something like that, find out it's not a good decision, and now we're trying to put the pieces back together. And I think the other piece is just like, what's the cost associated with it? You said the taxes, but then, you know, what's it cost to live in Brazil? What's it cost to live in Florida 6 months out of the year, to sell your home in Ohio and go live all year in Washington? So that's usually what I try and push in on, because I think a lot of people think of what they want to do and it sounds really fun, but they don't kind of play it out and see what it's going to cost to make that kind of adjustment or save you.
You guys are younger than I am, wink, wink, but I cannot imagine taking the house that I lived in for 30 years and trying to sort through it. I know somebody in production who just went through this. You know, you're going through your house, you're purging, you're trying to figure out what you need to keep, what you're going to get rid of. I mean, that's actually something you have to do as well.
Well, that's actually something else that's serious, and I'll stop talking for a second after this, but like the long-term care component, that's very lame to bring up to anyone, especially when you're thinking about how fun it's going to be moving into retirement, you know, whether you're in your 50s or your 60s. But if you're making a huge shift like that, like I always do say, like, in 10 years from now, 15 years from now, is that still going to be a good fit for you? If it's a castle or a three-story home, like, is that still going to be a great fit when you're 80? Is living in a camper at that age really going to be the fit? Or is this just temporary and we're probably going to have to plan to make some adjustments again in a decade?
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine being in another country or in a remote area and losing your health? It's hard enough to lose your health when you're near a hospital. Yeah. But those are definitely things that the wanderlust personality might not hold too seriously, you know.
Or even even someone that's doing the camper example. Like, I have a family member, or sort of a family member, who they're doing that. They've heard 10 months out of the year, they just kind of go state hopping wherever they want to, find family, find attractions. But, you know, they had to ask themselves the question, you know, if I need to go to the doctor, how do I, you know, am I going to have to drive from, you know, California all the way back to South Carolina to go see my doctor? Well, the answer to that was yes. And, you know, airplanes make that easy, but at the same time, if it's an emergency,
right,
it doesn't matter what it is, and you're in a place you're not familiar with and don't have people in that arena you trust,
yeah,
that's a bit of a pickle.
Well, too, I think a lot of physicians' offices, you have to really establish yourself for a few appointments before you kick it into high gear. So the last thing you need is to be in a remote area of the United States or worse, out of the country, and you know, you can't establish their protocols. Mm-hmm. You don't have time, so you end up in an emergency room. I have a relative who took a 3-week trip to Bora Bora and did it every year. Mm-hmm. So very savvy about Tahiti and Bora Bora. And, had an emergency gallbladder attack that she didn't know she was having gallbladder issues. Ended up in a hospital. This is a really bad story. This is really a positive podcast.
Appreciate you bringing it up.
But no, I mean, you know, you don't think about these things when you think, oh, well, let's jam and go to Tahiti for 3 weeks. She ended up in the hospital that they learned was, you know, run by socialist medicine. And I'm not trying to go all political here, but, you know, you got to know those things. So he ended up having to life flight her to Hawaii where she could get full care. So know what kind of medical system you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. Wherever you're going, right?
Yeah, and that probably cuts both ways, right? I mean, like, going back to long-term care, I worked with a couple of people who want to retire in Canada. It's probably going to be cheaper in Canada than it is in the U.S. Now, you said I'll leave the quality of care aside. Who knows? But, I mean, sure. When I'm coming down to just dollars and cents, what's it going to cost you? I mean, it's for sure going to be cheaper to retire there, and good for them. That's what they want to do. So are we talking just in retirement, or are we talking – in general, just at any age with this conversation?
I'm thinking in general. I mean, what prompted me to want to talk about this was the article about the woman who decided her husband had passed away, and she decided she wanted to live her life. So she sold everything. I think she was 88 years old when she did it, and jumped on a cruise ship. They were big cruisers, and she jumped on a cruise ship, and she literally jumps from cruise ship to ship. She's 92 now. And apparently still doing it. You know, God bless her if you've got the health to do that. But it was fascinating to me because I thought, that's kind of ingenious. all of her needs are met, you know, on the ship.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I'm trying to think of something you would know better than I, what needs would not be met.
I don't know. I guess whenever I see those stories, I feel like it's like, that works for 1 out of 1,000 people.
Right.
I almost feel like that's what our job is 9 times out of 10, is not to, like, not to be pessimist and, well, kind of actually, but not to say it's not going to work out, but it is like, you know, again, I keep using Florida, use anywhere, right? Like, if everyone only looks at what's the property tax and what's it cost on the mortgage. No one looks at how horrible the insurance is there and the fact that you need flood insurance probably and not just regular homeowners insurance and just how big of a mess that stuff is.
The taxes. So,
yeah. Well, right? I mean, yeah, you save in state taxes. But point is, just I feel like to me it's always just play it out. Like, it probably sounds really good, and the more you play it out, the less attractive it looks. And that's why I think the value just comes back to the – if you really think you want to do something, you probably should at least commit like 6 months, a year doing it.
So
really make
research.
Sure it's what
do
you
the
want.
Do the research.
Yeah, and boots on the ground, right? Just sometimes you can spreadsheet something to death, but a lot of times it takes actually being there, mm-hmm. living it, and seeing if that's the fit.
Great
right?
point.
Because, you know, living in Hawaii is great, but even thinking about, you think about whatever metro area or area you live in, you know, you could live on the east side of town and it'd be a lot different than the west side of town.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to know that if you're not there? You know, if you're moving to Florida, do you want to live near the coast? You know, it might be helpful to figure out if living close to the ocean is maybe a little too touristy for you. If living too inland is a little too humid for you. Like, those are things that instead of just diving right in and making the big commitment, maybe it is that trial run.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like, and I could be cutting the show short here by saying this, but I'll put my bias on the table. Like, all those, like, 95% of those fun little experiences you mentioned at the beginning, like, to me, those all strike me as, how can I find the cheapest way to retire soon and do whatever? Like, I don't know. I don't feel like that usually comes from, you know, 365 days in a camper sounds just fantastic, and I want to do that for the next 30 years. I feel like it's, well, it's really cheap compared to what I'm currently doing, and that means I can retire sooner and do this, this, and this. And to me, it's like, okay, but you're probably setting yourself up for failure, or you're just leaving yourself very little flexibility. So I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of those. I feel like they're coming from a spot where you're limiting yourself a lot, where it's different if, like I said, if it's, you know, I envision my travel and retirement not being a $15,000 flight to Europe every year, but I want to buy a nice camper and keep it up, and we're going to do that 3 months out of the year. Or, you know, I want a second house because I've gone down to this spot every year and I love it there, and then we can spreadsheet it out. But those other ones were
okay.
I'm not a fan.
So what I want to do is kind of I want to give sort of the bullet point responses to each of these, because these are actually realistic. There are a lot of people who are actually contemplating doing this.
I'll judge that when I hear
according
the bullet
to
points.
YouTube. Yeah. Okay, I want to know about first steps. You know, when somebody comes to you and says, "I want to hike 6 months out of the year, out of state." So what are the top three or four things that you tell them to do to prepare to do that? And I kind of want to go through each of these that are a little more realistic than, say, a cruise ship. But I think the cruise ship is something that, I mean, there are more and more people doing it. I've actually looked into it. So let's tackle those bullet points for each of these.
I would start with, I mean, this, I don't know how else I'd break it out other than just saying, you know, write down what you want to do. Where do you want to travel? Are there specific feats you want to climb, or who's going with you, just to figure out what that cost might look like, and then just setting a timeline for that. You know, just like any other goal, you know, you're not gonna wake up, walk out your front door, and most people can't just run a marathon in a day. You're gonna have to train for it, which might come with extra costs. You know, you're gonna have to look at reviews, probably talk to people who've done it before. For that specific scenario, those are the pop in my mind first.
Yeah, I'd probably be the same. Is it going to be the same place every year? And how are you going to get there? What's it going to cost? I'm probably not going to start consulting on the best places to go hiking. I'll leave that
right
up to them.
No, that's out of your milieu, I think. But what about preparation for something? If I'm going to be away from it, there's a lot of people who leave, snowbirds that leave our state and they go south. You know, what are some things that you tell people to make sure they're doing in their financial plan in order to accommodate that?
Well, Tracy, if you were to go on a 3-week-long vacation, what are some things, if you left your house as is today, that would need done while you're gone?
Masterfully done right there. That's a deflection.
I don't think I like this format. I would, first of all, my animals would be a first concern.
Yeah.
my security of my home would be my concern.
That's a big one.
Yeah, right.
I can tie into insurance, too. Like, some homeowners insurance companies want to know that, like, how often you're there throughout the year. And if you're not there for several months, they want to know what the security system is. Yeah.
Okay.
It does play a role.
Another one that may pop, a couple other pop in the mind are, do you want someone to come over and regularly clean your house, or do you want to come home to some pretty gnarly dust bunnies? Things that we don't think about that, for instance, I found out when we first moved into our home was maybe a learning curve if you haven't run into this. If you don't use a plumbing appliance for a while, the seal on the drain may back up and your house may start smelling like a sewer.
Mm-hmm. Can't believe you didn't know that.
Air conditioning, furnace. I mean, you can get humidity.
They still need annual maintenance and all that.
Yeah, you can get humidity in the house. Mold can grow if it's left unattended. So really being vigilant to the house. But then what about taxes? If I'm relocating several months a year to another state, obviously Florida's the obvious. Taxation is always one of the things that I think about being important.
We're not talking about hiking anymore.
Well, I guess I did juke.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. No, we can go back to the hiking.
No, I'm fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hiking or whether you, I guess overarching, if you're leaving your home for several months to do anything.
You could hike to Florida.
Yeah.
You're traveling Europe. You're going to Florida. You're going out west. You're hiking in Canada. Whatever it is. You're leaving your home for 3 months.
Yeah. I try not to get too much into the qualitative piece, right, about the – like, fair point about the dust bunnies, but I usually steer away from that. So, I don't, yeah, it's just, you know, is your family there? How often are you going to have to be traveling back and forth depending on the situation? Again, how are you traveling? What's that going to cost you? Factor that into the budget, you know, whatever your retirement projection is. Like, is that affordable? If it's not, what do we need to adjust to make that happen? And then I think that's fair points on like the insurance, right? And the appliances, and make sure what's the plan for someone to at least do the bare minimum upkeep to not cause problems with, you know, water line bursting and causing, you know, a huge amount of damage and things like that. And then depending on the state, right, that's where you have to Ohio to Florida. Like, I work with plenty of people that go back and forth, but still does make sense for them to be in Ohio. But usually that's, again, more because of family, right? They need to be here more than 6 months out of the year, and it's just not really feasible to go elsewhere more than 6 months. But again, cost of living could be higher in that other state, too. So you have to play it out. Like, is saving the state income tax on whatever your income is in retirement, is that truly going to save you more than, like, the increased cost of living of just staying at home base and declaring that your residency? So you have to play it out. It's kind of tough to say as a general rule.
So if you're using living, you know, you're assessing your living expenses in this time of your life, you would have to use technology. Right, wherever you go, you would have to get real with technology. There's a lot of retirees that don't like technology. You would have to get real with technology.
And my mom still balances a checkbook at the end of the month, so I don't know if you have to do it, but I would recommend it.
You just have as they say in the business, a guy, you know, someone that can go in and check on the things, or a girl, or whoever.
Well, but if you want access to your money wherever you are, you have to be able to use the tools that are there.
Yeah.
So what kind of tools can people use for that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of banks that are nationally spread out. So, you know, you could go to a bank that's in Ohio and that same bank might be down in Florida. Although most platforms have digital apps now that you can use.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned with that. Like, again, you could retire outside of the country and still get your Social Security deposited every month. So it's at this day and age, I don't really worry about that too much personally.
Let's talk about creativity in the cost of doing this. So you hear a lot of people using their rewards points for their credit cards. So I would imagine you could probably accumulate and use substantial amount of rewards to pay for a lifestyle like this, depending on what you're doing. If you're going on a cruise, a long-term cruise, let's say, or you're, you know, deciding to take a trip to Europe.
Yeah, we should add our colleague Colin on this one, who's obsessed with credit cards. Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. I think that does matter. Even the little I know with it, at the end of the day, it's not that much of a difference. Like, know where you're spending your money, the bulk of it. That goes back to just, you know, whether it's a budget or just tracking your spending, knowing where it's going. But I feel like at the end of the day, like, one credit card versus another and the perks they're providing, we're talking maybe a few $100 a year in benefit versus it's not – find this neat trick that's going to save you thousands of dollars in perks because you use this card versus the other. You could come out ahead a little bit, but I don't think it's enough to swing the needle enough to say, like, this is a a good idea. I don't know.
Well, there's airline perks too, not just credit card rewards, right?
Sure, but you know, it's pay to play game, and at the end of the day, we're talking single digit percents of what you're actually getting back for what you're putting into the rewards program. So,
it reminds me of this. There was some. We'll have to clear this out if it's not compliant. But there's this David Spade stand-up clip where he's talking about going on one of those like propeller planes and how they're weighing every person before they go on. And like what's your weight? He's like 150. And you're like 150 or 155. He's like, that cannot possibly be important. I'm not getting on this plane. And that's how I feel like with what you're saying here. I'm like, it's kind of important, but it cannot possibly be that important that it shapes it. So I don't know. I'm not trying to snub this one, but
no, I know somebody who every vacation they take, they use rewards points.
No, and I'm sure you can. I'm just saying, like, generally you do that with credit cards, right? When mm-hmm. it comes to rewards, no, points.
Well, they use their airline points and their credit cards.
Okay, so fair enough. Like on either of those, it definitely can save you money and know what's the best source. I'm just saying, generally, if it's there's an opportunity cost for that, if they're using those points that way, I'm sure they could use another source to gain some points and use in a similar fashion. The difference between the two, I feel like, is maybe a few hundred dollars a year. Maybe you've seen something different where it's more like $1,000 or $2,000, but not enough to.
And I don't think you're sitting here saying don't use those programs. Like, what's the hurt in using them? It's just don't put the cart before the horse.
You know, hopefully, I'm not speaking blasphemy on reward points.
Cole's got his ear in the door, jaw on the ground.
You're gonna hear about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Investment strategies for sustainable travel funds.
I don't know how creative you can get with it. It depends on how far out the goals are. Like if you have a bucket list travel goal, like, yeah, you know, every year you're going to do just something like, you know, 5,000 or less per year, or 3,000 or less per year, whatever it is. But, you know, I bucket list item, I want to go to Greece, or, you know, I have family in Asia. I want to, you know, go out there, and it's going to realistically cost 20,000, or like, I have this huge travel goal where I want to bring the whole family. I want to bring the grandkids, and it's going to be really expensive, but it's probably not happening for 5 to 10 years. You can get a little creative, like anything that's just an annual travel budget. I just put in like a high yield savings account that pays you 4 or 5% interest currently. You can't really get that creative, because if you start investing it, trying to get fancy, there's a chance you need to get that money and you end up losing, as opposed to if you just left in cash. But if it's something like, yeah, I know this is 10 years, it's going to be a lot larger than I usually spend, then you can find some ways to invest it. I don't know how specific we should get on this, but more than just cash.
Not super specific.
Right, but don't treat it like this is a 30-year in the future. I want to go all in and get as aggressive as possible. But you can get a little bit more to make up some ground on that big expense goal.
Mm. I think the best thing to do is to obviously not be last minute with your plans. Have an idea ahead of time. Maybe not for everyone to have it 5-6 years ahead, because, to be honest, I'm not even sure what I'm doing this weekend. But, you know, at least having an idea in mind of what that vision is, what you envision to spend, who you want to take. I think that probably does more than – and just having – because you're not really going to – there's probably not a lot of travel that people do that you get too far off your normal savings plan with your retirement savings. Mm-hmm. So it's probably just getting piecemealed off of your – you know, what the general direction of your core savings is going.
We kind of touched a little bit on healthcare earlier. But for someone who is dealing with maybe some pre-existing health conditions and they want to do something like this – what are some first steps on the financial planning side of things that they should do to protect their plan, to protect their health care before they go?
As far as the qualitative piece, right, that's can you make it all happen based on whatever you've got going on? That's, you know, you and physician, whoever else it is. I guess I think of like Medicare or one of those plans. Like, and I know we've done shows with Medicare specialists. I'm sure we'll do another in the future. But just sitting down and really explaining all that, what your intent is, because whether it's a prescription drug plan or like a supplemental plan where it's Medigap versus Medicare Advantage, where you're traveling, is it outside of the country, is it for a prolonged period, making sure you've got the right plan that's if something happens out of left field that no one can really see coming, you know, are you going to have the best plan that's going to cover you? You're not dealing with massive out-of-pocket costs because you tried to do it yourself and kind of do it the plug-and-play online way. That's probably the main thing I would say, is just sit down with a third-party professional and lay it out there.
Yeah, because there are considerations, to your point. If you go out of the country, depending on what country you're in, your Medicare may not be covered. by those hospitals. There may be expenses that you need to think about. You know, if you need to be life-lighted, in your example, there are, I guess, insurances out there, you know, like some travel health insurances out there that
will cover. Yeah, I was going to ask you about travel insurance.
We'll cover those expenses. Mm-hmm. You need to buy, usually, you know, for instance, like if you go on a cruise line will offer an insurance you could guarantee it would work in, you know, being life-lighted from the cruise boat to Florida or whatever. Mm-hmm. But being aware when you're signing up for those policies, are there certain things that aren't covered? Are there certain countries that don't fall under this plan? So just really reading the fine print. Best way to do that is just hire someone to do that for you.
Yeah.
You know, who deals with insurance every day.
And you should probably have the gamut of tests or at least doctor's appointments before you go, I would assume, right?
Probably. I mean, I'm
doctor,
sure.
Doctor, dentist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, that's probably at any time in life, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going down to Central America, it's probably a slew of things they want you to get checked up on before you go.
Even Florida. If you got a pre-existing health condition or, you know, you have asthma or something like that, you want to get... see your doctor before you go, get your prescriptions refilled. Pets. Talking about pets. You guys both have pets. Do you have a pet?
I sure don't.
You don't have a dog? I thought you had a dog.
Nope. You got this one.
All right. Is there anything in the financial? I know you should be able to get pet insurance. Do they still offer that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is it something that people should consider if they're going to be gone for a prolonged period of time in retirement?
You probably should consider it just regardless. I mean, usually that's for like the massive... I don't know. It sounds cruel for people who love pets.
Then don't say
but,
it.
But no, I'm just saying. Some people are very forthcoming. Like if it's a bill past a certain point, they're not gonna pay it no matter what it is. So if you're one of those people, insurance probably isn't a huge deal. But if you're someone where it's like, hey, if it's cancer, if it's thousands and thousands of dollars, they're a part of the family, I'm gonna pay for it. That's usually when insurance is really good. That's what I would say. To me, that's not. It doesn't really matter if you're in the state and someone's watching them, or you're out of the state and or you're in state and you're watching them, or you're out of state and someone else is. It's more about just how much you want to come out of pocket for. In my experience, I don't know.
I think more importantly, because you know, pet insurance, I think is, you know, in my experience, it's some people have it, some people don't. It's not usually universal. You should get it kind of thing. It's depending on maybe what kind of animal you might have. But I think more importantly, for instance, if you take your animals with you, maybe get a referral from your vet for a vet wherever you're going. If it's in the States, I don't know if I really have much to weigh on. If I've never heard of anyone take an animal internationally with them, I'm sure it happens. But I think just having that aspect covered, and whoever's taking care of your pet, just making sure they have, you know, whoever's taking care of them has all the records and stuff to
and permission.
Yep.
Your signature. There has to be written permission for them to act on your behalf if there's an emergency, like having a child, honestly. Yep. It's crazy.
I trust you.
Yeah.
Sounds reliable.
You'll be in that chair someday.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Balancing travel with other retirement goals. How do people balance their desire for travel? Travel-centric retirement, I should say, right? With the other financial personal goals, such as maintaining, you know, home base and supporting family. Is there a rule of thumb on the financial planning side?
I think it's really individually specific. Either you have the itch for it or not. And, you know, people who have a big desire for it will fit it in and, you know, do it 6 months or 3 months out of the year. And, you know, I think most people at that age, you know, everyone has ambitions to do the travel, and maybe some people may have larger ones than others. But I think at some point, most people kind of come back to prioritizing maybe bigger things than travel, you know, family, you know, community, you know, things, the everyday sort of things.
Mm-hmm. So the moral of the story is to research, right? That's the top recommendation. Get a full understanding of what you want to do before you do it. Like anything else, this is so logical, you know, but you see all these people just kind of jumping in head first. And so many bad things can happen if you're not researched and organized. Make sure that you connect with your professionals, like your attorney, your CPA, and your certified financial planner, your physicians, your team, right? That's it for today. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. We appreciate you tuning in. We hope you'll come back.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a one-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.